outside our Unitarian Universalist Church in Provincetown, Massachusetts, there's a sign. And right under the title of the next Sunday's sermon are the words, "Come as you are." Now on the surface, it's clear what this means, that in this summer vacation destination, you can go to church in your shorts or T-shirts or flip-flops if you like. But in that church, and in this church here, and at Unitarian Universalist churches all over the country, those words have a deeper meaning. They mean whoever you are, you don't have to pretend to be someone else. You're welcome as you are. This morning, that is our message, and we begin with a litany that emphasizes what those words really mean. So after each statement, I invite you to respond, "Come as you are." To old people, young people, middle-aged people, youth, and children, and those of every age, we say,
"Come as you
are." To single people, couples, and to families of any configuration, we say,
"Come as you are."
To Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, theists, humanists, and to those of every theological or philosophical perspective, we say, to Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, Greens, and those of every political persuasion, we say, to Caucasians, African Americans, Native Americans, Asians, and folks of every race and ethnicity, we say, to those who labor with their minds or with their hands, to those of little means or significant wealth, to teachers and students, and to those looking for a job, and to those who are retired, we say, to gay men, lesbian women, bisexual and transgender folks, and those questioning their sexual orientation or gender, we say, here, you are valued for who you are. Here, we affirm your inherent worth and dignity. So come again and again, and come as you are. I now invite Kevin and Susie O'Brien to come forward and light our chalice, and as they do, I invite you all to join in the unison words of chalice lighting printed in your order of service. More like a flame than a place is our church, more of a trust than a creed, more of kindled promises. So let us consecrate with fire our faithfulness, our hopes, and our dreams. Please be seated, and I invite you to be attentive to a message from our Director of Religious Education, Michelle Cote.
Good morning. In the order of service, I have the name of this book listed, which is Unitarian Universalism is a Really Long Name. And after I thought this would be a perfect book, I reread it and realized it's a really long book. So I'm not going to read the whole book, but I am going to ask you some of the questions that the book references and see if you can give some of your opinions. And this can be for youth, children, or adults. It says, "Who are we?" is the first question. And it says, once again, that Unitarian Universalism is a long name. And does anyone know why we have such a long name of Unitarian and Universalism? Allie? Two different churches that came together. What were you going to say? Yeah. That is true. The youth were the people, the driving force between the Unitarians and the Universalists joining together in one church. Now, here's a bonus question. Anyone know what year the two churches came together? Julian? 1961, he is correct. He was also here at the first service. and then it goes on to say, what do we believe? And that is a hard question to answer. We could take a whole service just on that. But is there some opinion that someone gives as one major thing that we believe? Go ahead. The seven principles. It's like you wrote this book. That is true, the seven principles. And that is one thing that we, as most Unitarian Universalist churches, believe and follow in the seven principles. And then another question. It says, there's lots of questions that I'm not going to reference. But this book is at the membership table, and if anyone wants to take a look at it, it's got some really good information. Now, this is one that everybody here should know, so I should see every single person's hand up. What is our religious symbol? What is our religious symbol? Ike. A chalice, that is correct, and that is the symbol of all Unitarian Universalist churches. And there's other questions in here. Here's one, it says, what is Sunday school? All right, I'm going to get it right this time. Meg. Yes, and what Meg said is when you go to church on Sunday and then you learn about our religion and other religions. And we don't call it Sunday school here very often. We usually just call it RE, which stands for religious education. And there's lots of other questions, and I'm not going to go through them. Some like, how do we celebrate? What's a congregation? But if any of those questions are things that you have thoughts about or want to see if your ideas are right, or at least with this author's opinion, this book will be in membership, on the membership table. All right, thank you so much.
Who we are, that's the topic. Well, a few years ago, a man was sitting in his neighborhood coffee shop, and looking across the room, he saw Bill Moyers, the wonderful PBS commentator, drinking a cup of coffee. He stared for a few minutes to make sure that it was in fact him. And in the process became very excited to see a famous person in his coffee shop. So he got up from his chair, rushed over to Bill Moyers, and with great enthusiasm said to him, "Do you know who you are?" Well, Moyers understood that this was really a silly question, generated from the nervous excitement of the moment. However, Moyers pointed out later that the question itself is a most important one for us all to ask. This morning we're going to explore that question, the question of who we Unitarian Universalists are. I know some here today are very new to this religious tradition. Maybe today is the very first time you've been to a Unitarian Universalist worship service. I hope this service will at least begin to answer that question for you. But this service is just as much for those who've been coming to this church for years, or who have identified as Unitarian Universalists for a long time, maybe even their entire life. It's often difficult, even for longtime members, to clearly and briefly explain Unitarian Universalism to a friend. What do you say after you say, "You're a Unitarian Universalist"? Several years ago, a past president of our denomination suggested we should each formulate an elevator definition of our faith. And by that, he meant one you could give in the brief period from the time you get into the elevator until you stop at the floor you selected to get out. It's an interesting exercise, and I invite you to give it a try. In today's sermon, I'm going to give you my answer to the question, who we are. However, don't get too excited. I'm going to claim minister's privilege, and mine will be sermon length, not elevator length. The question of who we are has inspired more than a few jokes. For example, what do you get if you cross a Unitarian Universalist and a Jehovah's Witness? Someone who frequently knocks at your door but has no idea what they're there for. And although these jokes are amusing, they all suggest something that I believe is patently untrue. They suggest that we have no faith, that we believe in nothing, that this is a wishy-washy association where you can believe anything you want. I cringe when I hear that statement, "You can believe anything you want." But I'm afraid that we sometimes invite that conclusion. You know, we are pretty good, in fact, very good at defining what we are not. You know, in our church, we don't believe this, we would never do that in our church. But telling folks who we are not really doesn't let them know much. In this sermon, my focus will be on who we are. Let's start by acknowledging that our religion has a very, very rich history. We trace our roots back to the early Hebrew tradition. We were part of the debates in the early Christian church and the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century. If there's any such thing as a uniquely American religion, we are it. The first six presidents of the United States, three were Unitarians, and two more since. The American literary and philosophical tradition is made up largely of our folks. From Alcott to Melville to Hawthorne to Longfellow, Emerson to Thoreau, all Unitarians whose works, if you read them, reflect the message of our faith in that time. On every major social justice issue, Unitarians and Universalists were there in the lead. Certainly not alone, but there and moving the issue forward. The abolitionists, the crusaders for women's suffrage, the civil rights movement, the recent movement for equal marriage. So many of those in the lead were Unitarians and Universalists. From Universalist founder of the American Red Cross, Clara Barton, and Unitarian father of public education, Horace Mann, and the great crusader for both prison reform and better conditions for the mentally ill, Dorothea Dix. All Unitarians and Universalists. We, with others, created and reformed the important institutions of our society. Our history is very rich. I love to share it with others. I've just finished sharing it with another new to UU class, and I enjoyed it greatly. And I commend it to your study. You're always welcome to come to those classes we offer twice a year. And I think the more you know about it, the more I'm sure you'll be proud to be part of it. But we don't live in the past, as rich as it is. We are, I believe, a faith for our time and for the future. You know, so often I get the question, where do Unitarian Universalists stand on this theological or philosophical question? One of our Universalist ancestors, L.B. Fisher, was once asked where Universalists stood on some contentious theological point. And he famously replied, "We don't stand, we move." Indeed, in the rich history of our religious tradition, we have moved a great deal. And I think that's where you have to start when you're explaining who we are. The very idea of religion as changeable can strike fear or terror in the hearts of many religious conservatives. They believe that revelation is closed. For them, all the answers have been given, all the rules laid down. We see this in those traditions that read the Bible or the Quran literally. We see it in traditions that have authority figures whose wisdom and judgment cannot be questioned. There are still many who believe today that true religion is basically unchangeable. Many of us grew up in those traditions that preached as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. We respect those people who believe this way. But as a faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism is quite different. We are, in fact, uniquely poised to move, to change. We're not tied to the literal interpretation of any text, nor confined by any dogma. And in fact, we've always moved, but not willy-nilly, changing in ways that might throw out the baby with the bathwater. Instead, we've moved step by step as the influences of science, philosophy, cultural changes, new political thinking have entered our movement, and as we understand in new ways the rich teachings of our Judeo-Christian roots, and as we embrace the teachings of other religious traditions. Revelation for us is not sealed. We understand that a religion must meet the demands of its time and embrace the new learning of its generation. One of our hymns that we'll sing in a little bit says it well. We revere the past, but we trust the dawning future more. Perhaps the most important thing we need to acknowledge in explaining who we are is our embrace of theological pluralism. Many of you may not know that Unitarianism flourished in Transylvania in the 1500s, and today there are still nearly 400 Unitarian churches there. In fact, this church has a partner church there. Well, the founder of these Transylvanian Unitarian churches, Francis David, put it this way. We do not have to believe alike to love alike. The freedom of the individual to responsibly search for her or his own understanding of ultimate truth is central to who we are. The theological perspective or perspectives to which we each connect and from which we make meaning of the world are not necessarily the same. Here in this room, I know, looking at you, there are Christians and there are Jews and there are theists and non-theists and there are those who find their grounding in Buddhism, in Hinduism or earth-centered spirituality. For some, there is a connection to God. For others, to the spirit of life or the source of love within us or to the power of nature or to the best of human effort and character. As my friend and colleague, the Reverend James Ishmael Ford, says, he's both, by the way, a Unitarian minister and a Zen Buddhist priest, suggests most of us probably are what he calls hyphenated religionists. For example, I believe he identifies himself as a humanist Christian Buddhist. And by suggesting that most of us are this hyphenated religionist thing, he's suggesting that we each probably draw meaning or tradition or spiritual practice from several different places. You know, as one of our teenagers in this church, in response to a woman who had little use for our tradition and asked rather snortily, what do those Unitarians believe anyway? As he said, we believe that all religions have some truth, and no religion has all the truth. Not a bad answer for 14 years old. Being diverse and often hyphenated as to where we derive our spiritual grounding might seem to make it difficult to have religious identity, to take our place among the religions of our time. I believe just the opposite. By embracing pluralism, we send a strong, clear, and perhaps never more important message to the world that not only is it possible for people with different religious ideas to come together, in the words of Francis David, to love alike, but moreover, there can be rich unity within this diversity, which can cut across the often divisive forces of creed or culture. Look at our world, my friends. Look at all the conflicts that at least in part are based on the unwillingness to embrace religious differences. Is it not clear that the world needs a religion which takes this kind of open theological perspective? Because we do not require that people profess a certain creed or particular set of beliefs, it leads people to conclude that we are not religious people. Again, I could not disagree more. We struggle with the same ultimate questions that our ancestors of biblical times did. The questions haven't changed. And just as they tried to answer them based on their understanding of the world, on their experiences, we try to do the same. And I don't think we're any less religious. Did you know that the word religion is derived from a word meaning to bind together? Religious people are people that bind themselves together. And there's a great deal of that binding together right here. In many churches, it's a creed that everyone is supposed to believe that is said to be the glue that holds them together. But in our free church tradition, it's not a creed, but a covenant. Our covenant that we say every week, it's a set of promises that we make to each other. The words can vary from Unitarian Universalist church to church, but essentially, we commit that we'll be there for each other, serve those in need, we'll seek the truth and love, and live lives guided by that spirit and by the values we share. This coming together as beloved community is more important to us than the particularity of our beliefs. In 1959, the Unitarian theologian Clarence Skinner wrote, "The beloved community is not an organization of individuals seeking private and selfish security for their souls. It is a new adventure, a spontaneous fellowship of consecrated men and women seeking a new world. The beloved community is not just a place where we come together to discuss theology or issues of the day, nor is it just a place where we reach out in social action and service to others. Primarily, it is the spirit of love made real in human fellowship." Spirit of love made real in human fellowship. That's who we are. And this leads to what I believe is the central concept derived from our Unitarian side of the faith, and that is the idea of oneness. It comes to us from our monotheistic Hebrew ancestors who proclaimed there was one, not many gods. We fought that battle in the early Christian church. We were there in the 4th century when the Nicene Creed was written. We were arguing against the idea of the Trinity. We lost, and Unitarianism became a heresy. And do you know what a heretic is? Well, it comes from a root word that means to choose. We choose to continue to believe in the oneness of the divine. But through the centuries, this concept has expanded with new meaning. Today, we proclaim it to mean that all human beings are one. That in that great oneness of all people, there can be no divisions. It is hate and prejudice that have shaped us to think otherwise, but we are naturally one. Recognizing our oneness requires us to proclaim then that no one is excluded. Everyone has a place. And that challenges us not just to tolerate, but to embrace each other and see the inherent worth and dignity in every person. And then we took the next step to understand that the oneness that we celebrate is not just limited to human beings. We recognize our interdependence with all existence, with the earth and all her creatures. A religion for our time is a religion that preaches love and care, not just for our fellow humans, but for our planet, all her creatures, and the interconnected web of existence of which we are just a part. One of our great ministers of the past, A. Powell Davies, wrote these words. "Do you belong to a religion that says humankind is not divided except by ignorance and prejudice and hate? The religion that sees humankind as naturally one and waiting to be spiritually united? The religion that proclaims an end to all exclusions and declares a brotherhood and sisterhood unbounded? The religion that knows we shall never find the fullness of the wonder and the glory of life until we are ready to share it? That we shall never have hearts big enough for the love of God until we have made them big enough for the worldwide love of one another? As you listen to me, have you thought perchance this is your religion? If so, don't congratulate yourself. Stop long enough to reflect, to recollect the miseries of the world in which you live, the fearful cruelties, the enmities, the hate, the bitter prejudices. The need of such a world for such a faith. And if you can still say that this of which I have spoken is your faith, then I ask you this question. What are you doing with it?" And that brings me to the final critical concept, that we are and we must be an embodied faith, a faith put into action. We believe that a well-developed conscience is as sacred as any creed, and is the force that motivates us to do works of kindness and justice in the world. We learn from the Christian Bible book of James, it is deeds and not creeds that matter. It is in our works that we bring to the world the manifestation of what is the essential gospel of the universalist side of our faith, the proclamation that God is love. From this side of our tradition also comes the idea that none are lost, none are born evil, that the potential for goodness is always there, and our task is to help people bring that forth, live it, and bless the world with their lives. The founder of Universalism, John Murray, at a time when the harsh Calvinist doctrines of judgment and damnation were the prevailing view in the land, said we were called to something different. He said we were called to go into the highways and the byways and give people a new vision. He said, give them not hell, but hope and courage, and preach kindness and the everlasting love of God. I believe that we are still called to preach that kind of love. And our world needs that message of love as much as it ever did. This faith tradition of ours is a great treasure, given to us to enrich with the light of our time and to hand on to those who come after it. From the days of the early Christian church during the Reformation to our own time, martyrs and heroes have guarded our unique religious freedom of belief, and they have fought for our ideas and principles. They came together in beloved community as we do, and they serve the world as we try to do. You know, it is not a tradition of easy answers. In truth, to truly embrace this tradition of ours is demanding. But it is the tradition that I want to be part of, and I hope it's what you want to be part of too. Here together each week, we explore how this tradition meets the world. Here each week, we continue to build that free church, that community that's ready to meet the demands of tomorrow.